I think it's definitely been, a long time since the qualification in October, and I think the last few weeks everybody's just been, I suppose, very nervous around training and just anxious because, at the end of the day, there's only 23 that get officially selected, plus the three training players, and of course, to be one of those is an extremely proud moment for me and my family.
Is this the pinnacle of your career in your mind?
Yeah, I think, at this moment in time it is. But at the same time, I don't want it to be the only thing that we achieve. I think at the end of the summer, if we turn around and say that we had a really good World Cup, I think then that will topple it once again.
What is a good World Cup, Amber, for you? I mean, what are the expectations? Do you go, are you in the dressing room or at the team meeting saying, look at, let's not rule anything out, or do you set targets? How does it work in the world of football heading into a major tournament like this?
Yeah, I think most importantly is that you don't rule anything out. I think you can't limit yourself anyway. But at the same time, you're not saying, all right, well, we know we're definitely going to win it. Like, that's fixed. We're very realistic about our targets. I think probably the most important one is to get out of the group. Because I think if we get out of the group, then knockout football is a very different kettle of fish and anything can really happen there. And I think definitely looking at the group we have, to get out of the group would be a huge achievement. So I think right now everybody's just solely focused on that first game against Australia in Sydney in front of 80 plus thousand people and, making sure that they have a very difficult start to their tournament.
And it's a toughie, isn't it? Because it sounds like just the perfect dream. You're playing in the opening game against the hosts, 80,000 people there. God knows how many of them might be Irish. It might feel like a home game to some extent. But you can't get caught up in that either because you're in business mode. You're on the pitch. You're sort of looking to win. So I suppose there's a psychology there. You have to get that balance right, don't you?
You do, and in the middle of all that, as much as knowing about your task and kind of not getting caught up, you also have to take it in and enjoy it because, like, how often do we, especially as female footballers, get to stand in front of 80,000 people in a stadium playing the game that we all love? I think, we'll definitely not take anything for granted in that regard. But I think the biggest risk that all teams have going to the tournament is getting caught up in the excitement of everything and, having that opportunity where at the end of the game and the game passes you by. That's certainly something we don't want to happen. But, I think there's going to be pressure on everybody. I think probably on the first game, a wee bit more pressure on the Aussies because it is the opening game and they are the hosts, so everybody is, backing them to the hills, really. So,
the
to be
pressure's
honest
on
with you,
them, really, isn't it, to some extent? Or to a
yeah,
great extent, actually.
it is absolutely, and I think that's we're very aware of that. But at the same time, there's pressure on us because we have a game plan that we're good at, and we need to stick to it. We need to make sure that we get the most out of it. And also, there's pressure with us. We're playing against arguably the best female striker in the world in Sam Kerr. So, it's going to be pressure on both sides, but it's definitely something we're going to relish.
Talk to me a little bit about your form because got on the score sheet twice at the weekend, which was fantastic, fantastic for you. You weren't scoring as freely for the club, but that obviously can depend too on how the team is set up and where you're playing. So for those who don't know, talk to me a little bit about your club form going into the most recent friendlies and then sort of on into this competition, Amber.
Yeah, well, I suppose the first thing is that, bar the goals on Thursday night, I hadn't scored since the qualification goal in October. And I think, everybody looked at that straight away and said, well, that's not very good form for a striker. But the problem was, for a lot of that, I wasn't playing as a striker, I was playing as a right back. And then after Christmas, I had a little issue with my shoulder. And then just getting back into the team didn't happen. I found that I was being left out. I think sometimes a little bit unfairly, but I was also in a team that wasn't creating any chances or creating very, very little. And I think even towards the end of the season, I was coming on in games that were already done and dusted in regards to us not winning it. So, look, it's not to point blame at anybody. Of course, as a striker, you don't want to go that long to score. But, you also need opportunities. And I think they were very far and few between. So I think after Thursday, that little bit of confidence comes back to you, and it's still such a lovely feeling to score for your country.
I would say one feeling I will never enjoy. And does that require then the Republic of Ireland manager requiring a bit of understanding of you and some of the situations that you talk of that maybe sort of, limited your opportunities to score. Vera needs to know you and what you're capable of when played in certain positions on a certain stage.
Yeah, and I think I had a very open and, you know, honest relationship with Vera in that regard. Like, she always, you know, would check in when I didn't play as much. She would be asking, you know, what was going on. And I think from, you know, listening to things I've said and you know, other stuff that she's heard, I suppose she was very understanding of my situation. And it's football as well. Like, I think people automatically look and say, oh, she's not playing, she's not good enough. But you've no idea what happened during the week and, you know, what happened on training day today, or maybe they picked up a knock, and all these little things, they all manifest into factors of not playing. But I think being able to have an open conversation with Vera really benefited me. And I think at the end of the day, Vera knows from, you know, we've been working together now 4 years, that she knows that, you know, she can rely on me for the big moments. And I plan on continuing to do that as long as I can.
This competition is big for individuals like yourself. It's big for the teams, but I think it's big for women's football as well, isn't it? You know, because there's been a great forward momentum, and I think this really could throw the game into the stratospheres over the summer.
Yeah, I think if you look, go back to the last World Cup, I think the what came from that was unbelievable. Then you had the Women's Euros in England. I think what happened there, what it done to England, football in England, and just, I suppose, the other countries took note of it and says, right, we need to really up our game. And I know from playing in Germany at the time, they really took it. They were like, they felt that their standards in women's football had stagnated a little bit, so they needed to now improve them in the way they wanted to. And I think going forward, that was the plan. I think, to be honest with you, Greg, I think I'm so excited for what's going to be post-tournament, what it's going to mean for the world of women's football. I think even since our qualification here, the amount of girls that have got involved in football, I think there's, you know, there's just so many players and girls willing to get involved now because they've seen something and they're like, I want to do that. I want to be part of that. And it's so great. And we have that responsibility as well. So I think not only do we owe it to ourselves to create a legacy at this tournament, we owe it to everybody else who wants something to do when they're older and to have that dream of playing professional football, you know, because it is a brilliant dream to have.
Yeah, and it's amazing how it's just, you know, like, you know, 9, 10, 11-year-old girls that I would know, family and stuff, and they're kicking a ball around in the yard and they're pretending to be you. They want to be you. If you can see it, you can be it. You know what I mean? That's a beautiful bonus for your career and what you're doing for yourself, to be so important to these young people that they can relate to you. You know what I mean? It's a great thing, I think.
Yeah, and you know, we were at an event last night in the Mansion House, and they talked about a few years ago how when they asked a group of young girls, you know, who their idol was, they all said Sonia O'Sullivan, because she was the only one they could actually think of, and she was the only one they could actually say that that's the one that they know. Whereas a similar, you know, question was asked recently, and you know, Katie Taylor, Kelly Harrington, players of the Irish hockey team, Irish football women's, Gaelic footballers were all listed in this. And it just shows you that, you know, when they see the achievement, they see the success, you know, they want to get on board with it. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, the young fans are the ones we need to clue into, because they're the ones in 10 years who are, you know, we're going to be paying tickets to go and see them play. So I think that's a really important thing to have as well.
Yeah, but too, as a Donegal people, I mean, you heard Mark English on recently in athletics. We were chatting on this show to Jason Quigley on the world stage in boxing, a global stage, a couple of days ago. And now we're talking to you and Kira as well, you know, taking to the world stage for our tiny little corner of the tiny little island that we live on. Like, it's amazing what we're doing here in Donegal, I think.
It is, but you know, Greg, I think one thing about the Donegal people is that we never in our lives have had anything handed to us, and we fight for everything we get. And I think that's the mantra that, you know, I know myself and Kira definitely take with us, you know, that we don't expect anybody to give us, you know, hand us anything. And I think having that attitude is just something that the Donegal people are just that wee bit more hardened than a lot of them, the ones down the country. Like, if only the Dubs had our mentality now, they'd be flying. But like, it's just the way it is. And you know, as you said, you look at the size of Donegal, and I suppose you look at the facilities in Donegal, they've really improved over the last year, but for a long time they weren't there. But yet they were still producing people who were going to represent Ireland at the biggest stages in the world. And I think that sums Irish people and Donegal people up very, very well.
Yeah. What happens for you now? Like, can we wrap you up in bubble wrap and cotton wool and stuff? Or, you know, like, do you walk around on eggshells for the next couple of weeks?
Well, no, not really. Like, it's we're back on training today. We had a wee bit of like a down day yesterday and training today, training tomorrow. And then next week, we're obviously planning for the France game. But like, Friday next week, Saturday next week, we fly out to Australia. So like the turnaround has been absolutely, it's been lightning, to be honest with you. And even coming into camp 2 weeks ago, you know, we were still like, oh Jesus, you know, still 3 weeks until we fly, but it's suddenly now, it's a week away. So it's, look, you just have to embrace it and enjoy it. And this is exactly where everybody wants to be.